Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
It opens wide to Wade. What a dunk! Fournier blocks the dunk.
Here's Wade against Green. Euro step. Basket.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, David?
Oh, my flagrant two has been rescinded and I'm eligible to play, so let's get started.
Sweet. So we haven't done a podcast since the draft lottery. So we kind of were assuming the Heat would have the number 10 pick. We tempted fate saying, oh yeah, we're going to get the 10th pick. What are we going to do with it? What kind of players should we pick? We did an entire podcast about Kelly Oubre. Basically just tempting fate that we were going to lose the pick, right? But we didn't.
That's right. Alonzo Mourning went in there and did his job.
Yes, he did, like he always does. We're in good graces. So part of me was actually disappointed when we got the 10th pick, because for some reason I worked myself up before, like 10 minutes before the draft, saying, oh, they're getting the Heat are getting a top three pick. Like, it's just going to happen. This is, after everything that they endured, after losing, you know, the first pick in 2008 and getting, like, ridiculously leapfrogged by the Bulls, and then with LeBron leaving, it's just everything, like, the NBA just works this way. The Heat are going to Cleveland Cavaliers themselves into the first overall pick. I was absolutely positive. So that, I had talked myself into that, so by, like, the 10th pick, I was like, okay, like, this is going to go away, and we're going to have a top three pick, and then they had it, so I was a little disappointed. But then I had to remind myself that that was good news.
It is. I conversely was convinced that we would lose the pick altogether. I think I texted you beforehand that I was kind of reverse jinxing it by putting it out there, but I really did think we were going to wind up with a 14th pick in the draft, which would have gone immediately to Philadelphia. We would have been screwed out of the opportunity, but it didn't work out that way. So,
hallelujah. For us,
top 10 pick, woo! Bad option.
Now we get to talk about it even more.
Yeah.
So let's talk about our options. So other than Kelly Oubre, who is our favorite, how do you still feel about Oubre? It's been a couple weeks.
Right? I mean, I feel like some of the buzz has gone down, and I don't know why. I guess from what I've heard, it seems like Stanley Johnson's clearly a lock for the top eight. Like,
right.
He's not going to slide past Detroit, I think, at eight. So even though a lot of early mock drafts had him going to Miami because of his physique and his defensive abilities, etc., it seems like he's not going to be an option. So with that in mind, I'm not sure if Oubre... Now I'm kind of starting to warm up to the option of Devin Booker, and I don't know why.
I want to talk about Booker in a little bit, but I think part of the Oubre thing was that we had started that bandwagon, and a lot of people hopped on, and now I see... I don't know if it's a... I think it's us. I'm going to say it's us, because we had that podcast. I think I've talked about it in a few different columns, and... All of a sudden, in mock drafts, I'm starting to see Kelly Oubre. I don't know if that's a reflection of, like, what you were saying, Stanley Johnson rising up the board and not being there in these new mock drafts.
Right.
But all of a sudden, we recorded that podcast, and now I see Kelly Oubre slotted in at number 10 in almost every mock draft. That's not just a coincidence.
It can't be. I mean, we pride ourselves on being trendsetters and all things Heat related, and I think this is just another example.
All right. It's settled. So... If Oubre is available, I'd still love the pick. I think it works perfectly like we had. If you need to be convinced, just listen to the last podcast and you will be convinced. But in a nutshell, he can contribute immediately on defense. He's a transition nightmare. He's got a natural shooting stroke, and he can fill the small forward position, which is the position of need right now, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I do have something to confess, David.
Okay.
Right when the Heat, basically as soon as the season ended and we all started this whole process of talking about the NBA draft,
yeah.
I kind of tweeted it out there that I know who I want the Heat to pick. It's not going to change, but I'm not ready to tell anybody who it is. And then I had a series of people saying, is it this guy, is it that guy, is it this guy? And I said no to all of them because none of them were true. The guy was Devin Booker the whole time. And I eventually got switched onto Kelly Oubre. Luckily, I didn't come out and say that I wanted Devin Booker. So I never really went back to that original tweet that got some action on Twitter. But I think I'm back on that Devin Booker train.
What is it exactly that's changed your mind about it? Because to me, I saw him in interviews. He was very polished. He seemed like a pretty bright kid. On top of that, there's no denying that he plays with a kind of, again, this is highlights and maybe I'm just talking out of my ass here, but it seems like he plays with like a real awareness of what the game is, despite his youth, despite the fact that he wasn't, you know, playing a whole hell of a lot of minutes in Kentucky. He seemed to be very aware offensively and defensively of what he needed to do, which is usually a skill that translates very well over a prolonged collegiate career and definitely extends into an NBA career. So you look at his skill set, he seems like he's a pretty, again, aware, intelligent player, high basketball IQ, whatever you want to call it. And on top of that, the kid can shoot. There's nothing to dislike about him unless for some reason he has some kind of injury history, or it's not like his shooting stroke is going to go away in the NBA.
Well, that's the thing. He's just so young that he hasn't really had a history. You know what I mean?
So, old.
Right. So, you know, when you're the Heat, Pat Riley typically likes veterans. This would be literally the most opposite he can go with this draft pick, because he's the youngest guy in the draft. So, what I liked about him is I watched a lot of Kentucky. I didn't watch a lot of college basketball, but I did watch a lot of Kentucky because everybody was talking about, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns, and they always have, like, the next group of NBA players, so I just, like, watch them just for NBA reasons. And I didn't even know who he was, and he jumped off the screen to me just because he moved around the court in such a way where it was like, oh, this guy knows what he's doing. Like, he's got a plan, and that was, like, rare for me to see. And the reason I don't watch college basketball is because it's mostly just sloppy and nobody knows what they're doing. But this guy was like, oh, this guy knows what he's doing. And I went and looked him up, and it turned out he was, like, a top 20 recruit. And I was like, oh, this guy's, like, legitimately, like, not just the token guy that shoots threes. He's actually good on Kentucky. And so that helped me. And then he's got a great 3-point stroke. Obviously, it's a major position of need. Those two things, me seeing him live, and then him being a 3-point shooter, the best 3-point shooter in the draft. That's why I originally wanted the Heat to draft him. And then I guess he was sliding down draft boards and stuff because there's questions about his size and stuff like that. And now he's going back up the draft boards. And when he has a quote like this, which I'm about to read, if bloggers were in charge of the draft, Devin Booker would be a top 3 pick because of this quote. A lot of people compared him to Klay Thompson, and he said, and this is via Ira Winderman at the Sun Sentinel, he said, a lot of people say I'm Klay Thompson. I get that comparison a lot. I like that. I studied most two guards on the Synergy app, not only because I want to find ways of how they score, but I'm also ready to have to defend those players. So I'm trying to figure out the tendencies already. This dude's on Synergy. I'm all in.
Again, I saw an interview. I don't know if this is where the quote was lifted from, but I saw an interview during the draft combine. Obviously, he didn't play, but you know, he was brought on board during the broadcast. They interviewed him, and he's the one that had made the Klay Thompson comparison, although some other people had made it as well. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, he just seems like he was really very bright, very aware, willing to do the work. He understood his weaknesses, and he wanted to continue to develop them. And I think he made some favorable comparisons as far as his shooting ability and what Klay Thompson brings to the floor. The Synergy thing, yeah, that's a whole other level there. But overall, I mean, he seems like he's a good fit. Now, I think there's more to the quote there. I'm not sure if there is or not. But he did get interviewed by Pat Riley. And
right.
Pat Riley did offer the nugget that Dwayne Wade's career is nearing an end, but that it would be great for Booker to come in and get mentored by Wade, who could give him a whole wealth of experience on how to, you know, just master that up fake the way Wade has, how to play the old man game that Wade has thrived in over the last few years, just, you know, impart some of that incredible veteran savvy that Wade has accumulated over the course of his career. I mean, it could only be – we're talking about if his physical ability matches the kind of developmental mental development that he could achieve in Miami, the kid could be an all-star for years to come.
And we've talked about Wade's – do we think he's a coach? Do we think he's really the kind of guy that's going to mentor a player? But I think in the case of taking a shooting guard under his wing, I think that is definitely a possibility. And – one thing that people say about Devin Booker is if they took him, the Heat wouldn't really be filling a position of need, but it would be like, you know, you'd be filling in your shooting guard of the future. But they need a three-point shooter, and you can play Dragic, Wade, and Booker on the court at the same time. I don't buy this idea that you can't play those three at the same time, that Booker's not big enough to play small forward. Spoelstra's all about, 6'5.5", and it doesn't even matter. I mean, Spoelstra played, and a lot of it was due to necessity, but he played four guards at a time. He played five guards at a time last year. I mean, he's not really, I think, one to rely so much on position. If he needs spacing on the floor, he'll just put in Booker at whatever, just on the floor as one of those five guys. He'll do Dragic, Wade, Booker, Bosch, and Whiteside. Like, why not? Like, I don't know if that's his starting unit, but I think you can that can get minutes.
No, I don't see why not. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a lot of versatility there, a lot of floor spacing, mm-hmm. clearly. A good mix of skill set. I mean, you've got Whiteside and Wade pretty much, not necessarily confined to the paint, but that's where they work best. Goran Dragic is an inside-outside kind of guy. Clearly, Chris Bosh is along the same way. So, I mean, that's a very deadly lineup when you look at it that way.
And we know that this coaching staff can do wonders with players defensively. We've seen it. This coaching staff is very, very good at teaching defense. So I think when it comes to that side of the ball, Booker has a real opportunity to grow. And he obviously wants to. Like, he's on the Synergy app trying to do it. I mean, that's like Shane Battier stuff. And one thing that I kind of read in this interview is that I don't know if his agent told him what to say or if he's really well, like, PR trained or something, but or media trained. But, I mean, you could tell he was choosing his words carefully. He was saying things that were only going to boost his draft stock. He never said anything that was going to, even when he was talking about not being the most athletic guy in the draft, it still came off as a positive. And when they asked about his age, he was able to spin it positively. Now, I don't know, again, if that was somebody else filling in words, but that's hard to do for an 18-year-old, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, Michael Beasley was young, too, when he was drafted, and he was spending most of his interview time talking about SpongeBob SquarePants.
Exactly. This is different. So, yes, even if everything he's saying is fake and not true and just spin cycle stuff, that shows that he's smart and he can think on his feet. And that stuff matters to me. I'm like, this guy is smart. I want smart players. And if you're a three-point shooter and we rely on you for, you know, floor spacing and being in the right position, and if we need somebody that's 18 but also going to be able to contribute right away and get it and get better so that you can contribute now as a floor spacer but eventually be an all-star guard for us when Dwayne Wade retires, that's the kind of guy you want to get, right? Somebody that's good now but has room to grow and can grow quickly.
Yeah, I'm starting to really – I'm starting to work myself up about it because I feel like he's going to be the best fit for Miami in the long term. And, you know, maybe Oubre fits better in the short term, but Booker has more upside to it. And I just don't want to be that team that misses an opportunity in the draft, you know?
You don't. That's my fear, is that they take Booker because he fills a more obvious need. And he's almost a safer pick because you know he can shoot. Though Oubre, if he becomes like the next big Jimmy Butler, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, 3-and-D, 2-3 swing guy, you could play a little bit of 4, you know what I'm talking about? Like those guys. If he becomes that and just deadly in transition and all of this stuff, it can just be a nightmare for teams. And we're stuck with like Kyle Korver. Like Kyle Korver is great and all, but if we passed on Kawhi Leonard or Paul George for Kyle Korver, that's not going to look good.
Right. You know, it depends on how you look forward. As far as the Heat front office and the team is concerned, the coaching staff particularly, they have to look at the team and determine whether or not it's more advantageous, and probably is, to have a lot of versatility up and down the floor, like at all five positions, you know, and that probably works best. But there's something also to be said for a team that has clearly defined roles, and maybe Booker might thrive as the long-range shootist. You know, that could be something where he would be able to thrive in. But he also has enough intelligence, as you pointed out, enough court awareness, and maybe enough athletic ability where he can also be a little multidimensional. If not necessarily a great defender, he can be, you know, good enough.
And here's the scary part with Booker, though, is that if he can't hit threes at the NBA level right away, he's not going to get playing time. And then we end up with him and Shabazz Napier just being the two young rookie-type guards that never get any playing time.
Putting up incredible numbers in the D-League.
Exactly. So, you wonder, and speaking of the D-League, like, Andre Dawkins, like, he was a three-point shooting, you know, guy, and he couldn't get any run because he just wasn't able to do it at the NBA level. Now, that doesn't mean that Booker's going to be the same. I mean, some guys just make it and some guys don't, but you worry that, like, with his size, is he going to have a hard time getting off his shots? Is he going to be athletic enough to get around screens? Is he going to, you know, you wonder about all these things, and that's why the Heat are scouting him and why you have to do all this work, but he's rising up draft boards recently. Now, I don't know if that's because of his interviews, if that's just because of his combine in general, but that's the tough part. So I want to talk really quickly about their floors, right? You've talked about Kelly Oubre's floor and Booker's floor, and then their ceilings. Because I just said, like, if we get Kyle Korver and Oubre ends up being Kawhi Leonard, that's not good. But then again, if the Heat draft Klay Thompson, you know, if Devin Booker's Klay Thompson and then Kawhi Leonard goes a few picks later, or Paul George or Jimmy Butler, you know, that doesn't look as bad because Klay Thompson is more valuable to certain teams than maybe Kawhi Leonard is, right? It just depends on what you need.
And I mean, I think a lot of that depends on the future of Luol Deng in Miami, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true too. But
I mean, we're talking about a young player and how he's going to be utilized in that first year or two of his NBA career. And that could make all the difference, you know. I mean, whether or not if he doesn't play a lot of time, maybe he never gets the run, maybe he never gets developed, maybe he gets largely ignored, he bounces back and forth the D-League, next thing you know, you draft an NBA journeyman at the 10th spot in the draft, and that's not going to be a good option. But then again, you could potentially draft some guy who takes the time, learns, etc. It's hard to predict. I mean, can I just point out now how a year ago we were all talking about, you know, the finals, and now here we are talking about some 18-year-old kid being the possible savior of the franchise.
The good part is that the Heat have the most complete roster and ready-to-go roster of anybody in the lottery. I think that, I mean, you look at, like, what the Spurs had when they were, and I don't know if they're going to go off this giant, you know, decade-long tear, but when they had David Robinson and then they kind of, and he got injured and they ended up lucking into Tim Duncan.
Sure.
It's not quite that, but it's on the spectrum where I think bad luck that we're kind of lucked into a lottery pick that somebody that can step in right away.
They also sat down Sean Elliott for a long portion of that season so that they tanked. They might have been one of the first teams to, like, really actively tank for the Tim Duncan sweepstakes.
And the Heat signed Michael Beasley.
Yay.
So, one thing I think is clear is that you can't project what's going to happen with your roster. You can't project necessarily what your biggest need is going to be. I just think you got to pick who you think will be the better NBA player, right? Like, I don't know if you need to, I don't know if at number 10 you can necessarily, if you have the luxury of filling a need, you just got to get if you think Oubre is going to be better than Booker or vice versa, you just take who you think is going to be better, best player available.
But so much of that depends on fit, though. I mean, the skill set may or may not ever translate, but a big part of that is fit. I mean, we saw that this past year with Hassan Whiteside. You know, he was a guy who maybe had the skills, but no one would have known because he would have just been largely ignored, maybe brought into camp. Look, he couldn't make the roster this year in Memphis, and I know they have Marcus Saul there, but are you trying to tell me that he's not substantially better or at least good enough to outplay Kostas Koufos? I mean, he's an option, and yet he wasn't, you know. He would have been overseas, or would have been playing YMCA games at North Carolina the way he was before Miami brought him along. And so it really points out how essential it is for a young player in particular. You know, they all might have the ability, but there needs to be a perfect fit, whether they either mesh just perfectly with a coaching staff that's willing to mentor and develop them, or they get just enough playing time where they can continue to have those key moments where they'll build and build on those.
Don't you think that with both of those, like Oubre and Booker, like if you think about, maybe they won't start right away, but you think about the top 8 or 9 in Miami's rotation, they'll have an opportunity to be in that? Like, they're both kind of a wing player. Like, the Heat need a wing player. So, I don't know if they necessarily need, like, a point guard. Like, if they went and drafted a point guard, it'd be like, that's kind of weird. But
barring any trade, I see you know, Chalmers taking up most of those minutes as a two-guard backup. And so, maybe that defines less of a role for Booker. And then, that might open up if Luol Deng leaves, and then you have to promote, James Ennis, or maybe sign a free agent or something like that. But chances are you're not going to give the rookie those big-time minutes that early on. I don't think he's capable of sliding immediately into the small forward position, where he could be exposed, and then it could wind up being very detrimental to his development, etc. It's hard to say exactly where each of those specific players would thrive if they would be they would benefit more from less minutes or more minutes. I actually see Oubre as being more of a immediately slide in kind of guy. I don't know why.
I agree. I think it's his physical tools. You just know that he's going to be able to compete physically with other guys on the court. We don't know that about Booker, right?
His size is good for the shooting guard position, but there are some guys there that are so quick at that position.
Right.
I mean, he's going to be switching off on pick and rolls. I mean, could you see him trying to guard some of the quicker point guards in the league? That's going to be, you know, devastating for him. I don't think that.
Or vice versa. I mean, even if it's like a, say the Heat are playing the Rockets and James Harden does a pick and roll with Josh Smith, right. And he gets switched onto Josh Smith, he's dead. You know, there's no way. But, you know, Oubre, I think, has the athletic skills and the length and the size where he can at least hold his own, right? I think against anybody, for the most part. You know, for the most part of any other NBA player, like, he's at least even, you know? He's kind of there.
He does have the impressive wingspan, too.
Exactly. So, so we're back on Oubre then, right?
It's... It's tough to say, right? I mean,
this is such a tough decision for us to make, David. I don't know how we're going to do this.
I don't know. I think we should just get drunk and throw darts, to be honest
with you. All right. Speaking of getting drunk and throwing darts, Goran Dragic. How's that for a segue?
I didn't know where you were going with this. I didn't know if you found the pictures or whatever. But yeah, Goran Dragic.
Recent report, Barry Jackson, Miami Herald, saying that there's 5 teams that are interested in Dragic, but that the Heat are still front runners. And that article is here.
And those 5 teams include the Lakers?
The Lakers, the Knicks, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Sacramento Kings. But so Jackson also says that... what?
5 other teams in addition to Miami. That's right.
Correct. So, Jackson also notes that nothing to this point has changed regarding the Heat status as frontrunners to keep him. So, footnote to everything, the Heat are still frontrunners. However, are you worried about any of these teams, David?
Yes.
Any of them specifically?
No. I don't know that any other team offers a great opportunity, money, just overall quality of life aspect that would be a definite improvement over Miami. Like, LA is a nice place, maybe. New York is a nice place. New Orleans. I mean, they all have, if you're a young multimillionaire like Goran Dragic is, every city has their ups and downs to it. I think Miami has been a decent place to him. He seemed happy here. I think his family seemed happy here. And being in Phoenix for as long as they were, I think they probably got used to hot weather climates. So it's more likely that they'll, even though they're originally from, where is he originally from? Serbia?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean,
that's where he played. I don't know if that's where he's from. But
yeah, they're used to the cold, I guess, but at the same time, I guess they probably prefer warmer climates.
Who wins?
So I don't know that any other team offers a better, again, opportunity for him other than Miami. But, you know, so much of it could come down to money. Maybe they lowball him a little bit, kind of drive him away. Maybe he could take just slightly more money from another team and then go after that big payday.
So is it, it's kind of the Heat's game to lose almost.
Yeah, after last season, after last summer, I don't know that I believe anything one way or the other. You know, I'm not necessarily jaded, but at the same time, I'm just overly cautious. I don't expect any players to automatically resign until they automatically do.
Yeah, it's definitely... last summer, I think, hangs over a lot of Heat fans' heads, so it's something to be weary about, but I don't know. I just feel like the way this played out, they traded so much for him. I just feel like because a move can't really be made yet, that's why a move hasn't been made.
Right.
And I just feel like as soon as I think it's going to be a very quick thing. And he's a free agent though, technically. So why wouldn't we hear about other teams? Like, of course, the Lakers, Knicks, and all these teams are going to give him a call. And interestingly enough, the Lakers and Knicks were on his list at the trade deadline.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, they were options at one point. I don't know if they're still options. But is he going to do the whole kind of digging us around and taking free agent tours and going from place to place? Is he going to meet with Mitch Kupchak? Is he going to meet with, you know, Phil Jackson, etc.?
If the Heat offer him the 5-year max, which is what he wants, and he's even said as much in public, he wants the 5-year max. If they just offer it to him, I think he signs it because he was in Phoenix. He got traded to Miami in the middle of the season. I don't think he's interested in looking for another team. I think he just wants to be with a team that wants him and just settle it. And I think, you know,
wants him and pays him a lot.
Yeah, wants him and pays him a lot of money and gives him the playing time and is willing to pick up the pace and play fast. So with the Lakers, you have no idea how the hell that roster is going to look or who's even going to be coaching that team in the next couple of years. The Knicks, I mean, people ask if the Knicks are a destination city anymore or anything. Phil Jackson is an idiot on Twitter. That matters right now. Because I think that's a lot of these NBA players who are on Twitter so often, that is their only exposure to Phil Jackson right now. And he sounds like a freaking idiot.
You really think that? I mean, honestly?
You can't just call Phil Jackson whenever you want. He's not going to call you all the time.
No. I mean, I get that they have limited access to Phil Jackson. I mean, he's perched aloft his his throne somewhere in Madison Square Garden. He's not really interacting with the players. I don't know that he goes down into the locker rooms and exchanges pleasantries with guys from Oklahoma City or Miami or what have you. But I can't really think that, NBA players particularly have made so many stupid mistakes, or, you know, athletes in general make so many stupid mistakes that get exposed on such a continuous basis. I don't think any of them can throw stones at those glass social media houses. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it doesn't mean they don't, though. Because, like, I think players are more willing to forgive other players, but I don't know if they're willing to forgive management. Because if you're just a guy's teammate, you're like, dude, what the hell are you doing? That's one thing. But it's the guy that's your boss, technically. Like, that's kind of different, right?
But let's look at what the Knicks have done as a franchise and what Phil Jackson has done, you know, via social media. Yeah, James Dolan is an idiot.
Right, it's a whole thing. And then you have Derek Fisher, who clearly can't coach.
But I don't think players care about that. I mean, I really don't think that they do. I mean, I think you're looking for two things as a player. And I might be dead wrong, clearly. I'm not in the NBA. I think you're looking for, one, a lot of money, first and foremost. And then, second to that, the opportunity to, you know, chalk up a nice resume that says NBA champion at some point.
But you look at Goran Dragic, who says things like, I want to play in a fast system. You look at Devin Booker, who's on Synergy, and he's 18 years old, and he's not even in the NBA yet. I don't know. I think players, like, right now don't really remember Phil Jackson as being the... Like, you think about the Lakers, you think about Shaq and Kobe, right? Like, if you're a player, you kind of think about Michael Jordan, you think about Kobe. You don't really... I think there's a respect there, but I don't know. I think these players... There's certain players that do care. Like, LeBron James cares about the system he plays in. Goran Dragic cares about the system he's playing in. I don't know.
But he didn't sign with Cleveland because of, you know, what's his name? David Griffin and David Blatt, right? I mean, that's not why he signed in Cleveland.
He signed in Cleveland so he can control exactly what was going on.
Right.
Including the style of play. Yeah, so I mean, LeBron's like a whole other thing. But like a guy like Goran Dragic, like when he says things like, I want to play a faster pace, I want to play this kind of style, I think there are players that really do, I'm not saying all, but there are players who care. Players are smart now, I think.
I disagree. Well, I don't disagree that players are smart. It sounded wrong when my timing was piss poor. But I disagree that they care about what this guy in his 60s tweets on you know, fucking Twitter.
I think it factors in for some players. I think some players look at him and he's a fool and they're like, "What? Is this guy just like out of his league?" But
because he's not going to be listening to, you know, music at the club with him. You know, you really think that they're going to go? It's not like they're hanging out with Greg Popovich. And he's got more respect than anybody. This is a guy who's perpetually angry, couldn't know Twitter from Snapchat from a hole in the ground. You know, his biggest interests are cutting down Doris Burke and mid-game interviews and drinking red wine from his, you know, his vineyards, you know, Popovich vineyards or wherever the hell he drinks his booze from.
It's XYZ. It's in Oregon.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Uh-huh.
Sounds impressive, but you know, Popovich is regarded amongst players as the best coach.
Yeah, but he doesn't engage in stuff that he doesn't know, right? It's like Phil Jackson, like, what are you doing? Why are you on Twitter? You don't know Twitter, get off of it. And it just makes you sound like an idiot. Like if Popovich was on Twitter, it could hurt him.
No, man. I think it hurts you as a blogger who's supposed to criticize players, management, etc. And as a person who's, you know, knowledgeable about social media and looks at somebody who doesn't use it very well and goes, oh, what a fucking doofus. You know, that's all fine and good. But I don't think any 26-year-old player who has an opportunity to make millions in New York City is going to say, Jesus, did you read Phil Jackson's latest tweet? Fuck that. I'm out. I'm not going to go to the Knicks.
I think it's on a more subtle level than that. But it's not going to be like Knicks or unemployed. It's going to be like Knicks, Lakers, New Orleans, Milwaukee, Sacramento, or Miami. I don't know. I'm under the impression that some players care about the system that they're playing in. And right now, the Knicks, I think we got off the rails a little bit. I don't think it's just Phil Jackson's Twitter account. But if you look at the way that they're playing with Derek Fisher coaching and Phil Jackson, like, being married to this dated triangle thing and not liking three-point shooting and all this stuff and not being modern about things.
Okay.
I think that factors in, and players are like, yeah, New York's great, but it doesn't seem like they know what the hell they're doing up there. And
I will give you that one 100%.
Okay, so we got off the rails.
I misinterpreted how you were going with that. If you look at New York and say, shit, they don't have a plan, they have no idea what's going to happen from top to bottom, then why would I want to go to that lack of system? You know, then yeah, absolutely. I agree.
And Phil Jackson doesn't know how to tweet. So...
He threw a hashtag at the wrong time, yo. I don't want to sign there.
He hashtagged my name. It doesn't make sense. The Knicks are not happening. The Lakers, we already said, not. I think that might be the best opportunity. But they have to throw at, like, Dragic, be like, you are going to be our next Kobe Bryant. And that's just, they're not going to do that, right? Like,
no, they're not.
So
I saw another tweet earlier today about, like, the potential lineup that they could be the potential lineup for the Lakers next season. I mean, of course, barring any major acquisition and free agency or anything like that. And there was, like, zero floor spacing.
Yes. But that's exactly how What's-His-Face wants it.
Yeah, Byron Scott, yeah. I understand that completely. So, yeah, I mean, being a bad option or a good option for Dragic,
yeah, they're not happening.
As bad as the Knicks, right?
Not happening.
They're not going to make him a standstill shooter because that's not his most effective use of his skill set.
Right.
Considering he finishes at, what, 54% at the rim?
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. It only makes sense if he wants to go to L.A., if he just wants to live there. New Orleans?
His wife wants to be in movies or something.
Right. New Orleans, they need a point guard. It would be tempting to do pick and rolls with Anthony Davis. But ultimately,
they have their point guard of the future, though. His name is Norris Cole.
Good point. Moving on. Milwaukee. They need a point guard. They are fun. Jason Kidd's an ex-point guard. Of all these teams, I'm most scared of Milwaukee stealing.
But all season long, that has been your league pass favorite. Your guilty.
I'm a
secret
little
league
yeah.
Pass.
Yep. Yep. I'm a closet Milwaukee Bucks fan.
Yeah, you've talked about Kidd and his versatility.
He's
and
the
his
best coach in the NBA.
And
yep.
So you're not on the Michael Carter Williams support train?
No. That was a good. That was a great deal orchestrated by the great Jason Kidd. To ship away Brandon Knight and cut his losses now while he can. Because that guy wasn't going to be able to re-sign. They're re-signing Chris Middleton. So I think Dragic fits nicely in Milwaukee with what they want to do. And
Now here's an interesting possibility. Let's say Goran does go to Milwaukee. Do you go after Brandon Knight then? He's a Miami guy. Played at Pinecrest. Miami wants to do in the next few years?
Yeah, I think they would do that, right? Don't like you at least put the phone call in.
Yeah. Right? I see why not.
And the Sacramento Kings we're not worried about, right? That's a joke.
Well, I mean, can George Karl sell him on being the next
Ty
Gary
Lawson?
Payton, Andre Miller? I mean, he's had some success coaching point guards, right? I mean,
yeah, but you gotta ask him to leave Miami in the Eastern Conference in Miami to go literally to the opposite side of the country to Sacramento to play for the Kings in the Western Conference.
Well, the city's mayor was a former NBA point guard, Kevin Johnson. I mean, there's a lot of allure there, I see it.
Have you been to Sacramento?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
No,
so
there is no allure.
It's not Miami. The most fun part of Sacramento is called Old Sacramento.
Nice. I like it.
So that's what it is. It's the oldest part of Sacramento.
And what's the appeal there?
And you know what
like
they actually call it? They don't even call it Old Sacramento. They abbreviate it to Old Sac. And I'll just let you. It's an old sac.
That has all sorts of connotations that are all negative.
Dragic is not going to the Kings. nobody goes to the Kings because they want to. You either get traded like Rudy Gay or you're drafted there like Boogie Cousins.
Yeah, no big Friday nights at the old sack, huh?
not spending much time around old sacks. So, all right. So Dragic, he's staying in Miami. We're good to go.
Yeah, I think we wrapped that up pretty quickly. I mean, unlike the draft situation, that has us a little bit more perplexed. We've resigned Goran Dragic in 15 minutes or less.
We're pretty good at this.
I like our potential as general managers.
So, if it's up to you, if you're the general manager of the Heat, you re-sign Goran Dragic, you still haven't made a decision on Oubre or Booker, you still have to do some homework, right?
Right.
What do you do with Luol Deng? Let's just say, balls in your court kind of thing. I know it's his opt-out clause, but
sure,
your best case scenario.
I think you... You know, Pat Riott clearly, like me, maybe, or like a lot of Heat fans, maybe the last offseason, you know, jaded him a little bit. So, what was his exact quote from the end of season presser? No smiling faces, no hidden agendas behind smiling faces. Mm-hmm. I think you put out a feeler to Deng and his agent, whoever that might be, and kind of get a feel for what's going to happen. And I think Deng is sufficiently appreciative of what Miami did as far as not necessarily helping him to resurrect his career, but he wasn't getting a whole hell of a lot of buzz as a free agent last year, you know, after being possibly a divisive, you know, locker room presence in Cleveland and you know, the number of injuries he went through in Chicago. People questioned whether he was done or not. And while I don't know anybody wants to pay him $10 million this year other than Miami, I think that he's done enough in Miami that he still showcased that he's a capable, regular, everyday player, at least for, you know, maybe another year or two. So I think he'd be honest with them in saying, yeah, I'm going to opt out or no, I'm planning on sticking around. So I think, you know, the team will have some feelers out. You know, they'll talk to Deng, see where he goes from there. And I think they'll have a good sense of where Deng is going to be next season based on who they draft. And I think we just talked about that. If they go with a guy like Booker or maybe trade down to pick a point guard or something else completely different, then clearly they expect Deng to be in camp and for him to be their starting small forward.
You think it'll be cleaner than maybe last year's free agency then?
I mean, there was so much of that. I don't know that Deng has the same kind of options. It does, mm-hmm. definitely doesn't have the same kind of ego as James, where he's willing to hold the entire league and the entire process by the figurative balls. I mean,
by the old sack, so to speak.
Nicely done. That was. I think of our history of podcasting, which has had some incredible ups over its year and a half long period. I think that might have been your finest move yet. But anyway, I think he wanted to show that he had some kind of incredible influence, that he was holding everybody at bay, that he could kind of weigh his options, and he likes the power trip of it. I really think that. I don't think Deng is the same player at all, the same person that he... I mean, clearly there's an ego there. There has to be at the NBA level, but I don't think he's the kind of guy who's going to say, you know what, I'm going to hold one franchise at bay while I figure out what to do, all the while being courted by another team. Well, you know, I don't think that's his MO. So I think he'll be more upfront with the team. Because, I mean, ultimately, again, you're right. The ball's in his court. You know, either he stays and collects $10 million from Miami because he wants to, and Miami will be obligated to pay him the money, or he'll take off and then he'll see what he can do elsewhere. He's not going to depend on Miami one way or the other. It's either I'm sticking around for the $10 million that you're going to give me, or I'm taking off to see what I can get elsewhere.
And if he takes off, it's probably for a long-term deal.
Right, because we don't think Miami's going to offer that kind of multi-year
deal. Right, we don't think that. And, okay, so you mentioned briefly trading down. We were kind of looking up some numbers. The last time the Heat rarely keep their pick. They usually trade down, but that's like last year they traded. Well, they technically traded up, right, to get Napier, but they traded up a pick.
Charlotte went 24th, selected Napier, and they had the 26th pick, and they picked PJ Harrison.
But they tend to move around. So the last time that the Heat kept the player that they went into the draft with the pick with was Dexter Pittman in 2008, and that was in the second round.
That turned out well.
That was the best pick ever. Interestingly enough, Hassan Whiteside went with the very next pick. But, and just shout out to Ira Winderman again for putting these numbers together. I'm reading it right from his piece, but, I mean, Wayne Simmien with the number 29th pick in 2005.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that, like, we're talking like a while ago was the last time the Heat are keeping their pick. But at the same time, they did in the lottery. They tend to keep their pick. Michael Beasley in 2008, Dwayne Wade, right? I mean, they tend to just keep the guys that they pick in the lottery.
Caron Butler at number 10. Caron Butler at 10.
Yeah, great example. So it's hard to use the past to determine what they're going to predict the future, but especially in a weird kind of case like this, and the Heat don't necessarily, they're not in the lottery a lot. Like three picks is not a large sample size. So, I don't know. There's been a lot of talk about the Heat trading down, but I don't think that that's the right move. I think a lot of Heat fans want to trade down to add more players, and maybe they're not like really, like we were talking about Stanley Johnson. He's kind of projected in the top eight of this draft, and that's kind of the darling of most Heat fans, is Stanley Johnson. And a lot of people are saying, well, if he's not there, just trade down. And that's just kind of like an easy way to put it, but
I think they're thinking NFL draft.
Right? Like, that's picks. Like, they're thinking like what Bill Belichick would do. But in the NBA draft, it's like, if you don't get a top 10 pick, you might as well just not pick, like, for the most part, right? If you're not picking
the
lottery.
You know, if you get a top 10 pick, there's still a chance of failure amongst those top 10 picks. We've seen plenty of busts over NBA mm-hmm. history. And if you get a later round pick, you're almost as likely to get a 25th pick in the draft in the first round that'll pan out as you are to get somebody who's an unsigned free agent.
I mean, look at Shabazz Napier.
Right.
You know, I mean, how many times have, like, this list right here, Jason Smith, Stanko Barak, Darnell Jackson, Marcus Thornton, Wayne Simmien, I mean, Arnett Moultrie.
Oh, yes, the Arnett Moultrie era.
It's like it's hard to find players that actually do well. So even if we did technically, let's just for the sake of argument, let's say the Heat trade down, just for the sake, like Stanley Johnson off the board, just like all Heat fans, that's the only guy the Heat the Heat management wanted. Do you trade down with the Celtics for the 16th and 28th pick?
Like, would they be willing to give up two picks? I mean, they need those picks, right? I mean, they don't have, they have a lot of holes to fill.
The Celtics do, but just like, let's say they didn't want to do it. Would, should the Heat even do that? Like, I don't know. Like, who are the Heat drafting at 16 and 28? I mean, that looks great, but the 28th pick, he's not doing much for this Heat team. And now you're at, and now you're trying to be, and now you're stuck with a 16th pick versus a 10th pick, and obviously the 10th pick is better.
Now, now it's something to consider. I had a, you know, I hadn't thought about this, but clearly, and you've written about it on a number of occasions, the Heat are one of those franchises that puts a lot of effort into their D League development system.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they're thinking that because the level of talent, the separation of talent isn't that great from, say, the 16th pick all the way out to the end of the second round. Maybe they'd want more picks because they can take those guys and kind of stash them in the second and into the D-League and have them develop. They could go the route that the Thunder did last season with Josh Huestis, where they can draft him and make a deal where they can right. stick him exclusively into the D-League and pay him just enough money where they can continue to develop him there and the promise that he'll eventually make the NBA roster.
That's certainly an option. I just don't know if for a Heat team that's looking to compete now, if they want to trade out of the lottery to do that. You know, I definitely think that there's a reason the Heat are holding on to their second-round picks and not just trading them for anything, and I think those second-round picks are to help bolster that the Sioux Falls Skyforce, their D-League team. But at number 10, I just don't think you can really do that.
So, okay, so do you think a trade up is in the works, though?
I think it's more likely than a trade down. I think if for example, the Heat take somebody at number 10, I'm not going to be comfortable until a draft is over and done with that that player is going to be in Miami. Because they could draft a guy at 10, but actually be looking at the guy that the Suns are drafting at 13 and work out a deal where the Heat get a future first-round pick in exchange for swapping those picks, right? It might be strategic like that, like a strategic trade down, but it's not going to be before the pick, right? It's not going to be before they know what's happening. They're not going to trade number 10 for number 16 having no idea what's going to be on the board when they pick again in six picks.
So, yeah, we're looking at a draft which is probably going to be filled with an unusually high number of trades.
You think probably. So?
I think so. I mean, maybe not necessarily at the top three picks, but from that point forward, because it just seems like, you know, everybody's using the term very deep, but I think a big part of that is because everybody that's in the draft has a lot of potential but are so young and unproven. I mean, you've got two guys in Europe that have never played at, you know, well, they played international professional basketball, but right. chances are they might not be able to adapt to the athleticism of the NBA, and they're likely gone by the seventh or eighth pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are guys that are very unknown quantities. You don't know what you're going to get out of these. But so that a lot of people label it a deep draft, but it could just as easily be a very piss poor draft where none of these players pan out. Now, maybe again, not outside of the top three, where we think Okafor and Towns are going to be, if not all stars, if not Hall of Famers, at least they're going to be all stars.
Right.
Because their skill set projects well, they're young, they can, I mean, barring any injury, of course.
I think there's certain players that just do things really well. And that's, like, you look at a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein is number 8 on Chad Ford's big board. But,
right.
I mean, he's probably the best defender in the draft.
Right.
So,
he'd be a great fit.
I think if the Heat trade up, you're looking at a guy like that they might trade up. I think if they trade up, you're looking at maybe a guy like him, maybe a guy like Justice Winslow or Mario Hezonja or something like that, where that next tier, that next level guy, because you kind of have that like top eight that they have. There's like an elite eight right in this draft. But, yeah, I don't know. There's, Pat Riley can do a lot of things, and he's been known to do a lot of things. They could trade up, they could package Chalmers or McRoberts in a trade to move up or something like that. But, I don't know, so. Overall, I think they stay at 10 and they keep the pick.
That's kind of a anticlimactic situation there.
Well, if they draft Kelly Oubre or Devin Booker, it'll be fine. It'll be very climactic because they'll have a really good player.
Yeah.
Or a really bad player.
No, that's also a possibility. You know, I feel like I should bring this up in that I think at this point last year, aside from all the talk about the finals and free agency and everything else, like, I remember thinking, man, I couldn't care less about the draft. And this time around, it shows what a difference a year makes. I feel like I'm so invested in what the Heat are going to do with their draft pick. And that's just unusual for me. Because I was just looking at the Heat's draft history, as we just pointed out. It's pretty horrific, right? I mean, it's a terrifying sight.
It's not good. But if you take the top...
your first rounders, or you draft a bunch of crap in the second round.
Right. The NBA draft is really, really hard to predict. And that's why I think the Heat need to take the best player available, because they really can't afford to miss with this. I mean, even if they think, for whatever reason, Frank Kaminsky is the best player on that board and he's a can't-miss prospect,
wow.
You know, I don't think that. But if they think that, or just Miles Turner or whatever from Texas,
sure.
Like, I think they just got to take the best player available. They can't miss. This is not only a top 10 pick, but it's also the most valuable asset that the Heat will have for the next 6 years or so, if you don't count Hassan Whiteside. This is a really, really important pick for them. Because even if they, if you can draft the next all-star on the team, you know, the guy that fills in for Dwayne Wade when Dwayne Wade leaves, or you could draft just a really good player that becomes a trade asset and can become a pawn to go get a better player later on. Like Ron Butler. Like, there's just a lot at stake, I think, with this pick. I mean, the Spurs needed that Kawhi Leonard pick to keep that dynasty going. This is what it is for the Heat. They need this thing, this new youth guy to come in and just help the Heat move forward into this next decade. That's what I think. Maybe I'm making it more of a big deal than it needs to be, but.
So, okay, then. Let's apply that and kind of re-examine what we were talking about earlier as far as, you know, who the best player is. Who's the best player for the Heat moving forward? Like, not just this season, but beyond that. If you think that you can have Dragic at the point, you're going to have Chris Bosh at least for another couple of years, 3 years. You're thinking you're going to lock up Hassan Whiteside long term. What does that roster... those three starters clearly already established. What's lacking on that? More perimeter defense? Do you really put as much of an emphasis on perimeter defense when you have a proven shot blocker like Whiteside there? I mean, Bosch is a pretty skilled perimeter defender as well.
That sounds like you need a scorer. But I don't know that... do we know that Devin Booker is necessarily a scorer? We know that he's a three-point shooter. But, I mean, you look at the Warriors and they're built on three-point shooting. They're fine.
Right.
So, and Klay Thompson can do a little bit of everything, but really he's a three-point shooter. Stephen Curry can do amazing things, but he's a future Hall of Famer, so no reason to compare him to anybody.
But Bosch is comparable to Draymond Green a bit? I mean...
in the sense that they're spacing the floor. I mean, if we want in, you know, Bogut...
Whiteside
the paint is Whiteside, so if the Heat need Harrison Barnes, they can just go draft Kevin Looney out of UCLA. But that's kind of, the 10th pick is kind of high for that. I don't know. I think this is a matter of us projecting, but the Heat are the ones in the rooms with these guys, scouting them. If they think Oubre is just going to be better than Devin Booker, you draft Oubre or vice versa. I don't know that, because both of them would fill a major need, and I don't know, like, you look at how that roster projects further, but that's kind of my point, is you can't. You don't know what's going to happen. So, a 10th pick is somebody that's really valuable. They can change your franchise. You could figure out how to incorporate that player. The Spurs figured out how to incorporate Kawhi Leonard and give him more touches and make him the centerpiece of that offense, so to speak. But So if Oubre turns into this mega superstar, they'll figure out how to use him. And if Booker turns into this mega superstar, they'll make him the centerpiece of the offense.
I guess you're right. It's all about a management philosophy. Either you're doing something for an immediate return, at least a very short-term return, versus, you know, maybe a team like San Antonio that was, they already had a structure in place. They were looking for somebody to help grow alongside their big three, et cetera.
And I think the Heat have the best of both worlds right now because they don't necessarily need, like, this 10th pick, chances are if the Heat want to win a title this year, this 10th pick isn't going to make a major difference. Like, their core five are pretty much in place. And really, if we're talking about Chalmers and McRoberts and these guys, and Chris Anderson, they kind of have their top eight of the rotation already set. This guy can come in, maybe add something, and put them over the top, but I don't think they're counting on the 10th pick to really do that right now. I just, like, it's a best-case scenario that they could, like Kawhi Leonard.
Right, so we were looking at, you know, maybe a comparison to the Warriors model and seeing maybe Booker projects as that kind of Klay Thompson type. But then if you look at Dragic as Parker, you know, Tim Duncan, Chris Bosh comparisons.
Yep.
You know, Ginobili, Wade, who's missing is that small forward, you know, defender, MVP of the future, Kawhi Leonard. And that's where definitely Kelly Oubre fits more of that model, doesn't it?
If you look at what the Heat are doing, just on the court, off, like, and how this roster is constructed, I think you look at the Spurs definitely way more than the Warriors. I think that's a very real thing. I think the Heat look at the way the Spurs are doing things almost like they looked at the Celtics when they first kind of got that big three together. Then they kind of saw the Celtics fall apart and saw what the Spurs were doing, and they're like, "No, we want to be more like San Antonio," and they've kind of built that same sort of thing. I think they want to do a lot of those things and just like ball movement stuff and everything. You look at what the Spurs do. The reason the Spurs are so hard to defend is because you don't know what they're doing. They don't really run set plays as much, but they have certain gadgets and things in place. Like, certain parts of that clock are in place that it just moves by itself sometimes. And that's what the Heat try to do. I've always complained about in this podcast that the Heat don't really run a lot of plays and that sometimes they need more of those. But in general, it's just to be, like, you can't scout them. You don't know what play they're going to run because a lot of times they don't run plays. They just know that if this player is doing a pick and roll here, then I need to move in this direction over here to maintain space, and that's why we always hear players being on a string. That's, Spoelstra loves that, being on a string. So everything that's kind of happening, so yeah, I think that comparing this team to the Spurs is more accurate than comparing this team to any other team right now in the NBA. And I think, yeah, Kelly Oubre, that's one of the reasons why I liked him and why I wanted to kind of talk about him so much. It just makes sense.
Are we going to title this the Kelly Oubre Podcast Part 2?
How about Kelly Oubre versus Devin Booker?
That makes it sound like a fight of some kind. I don't know if there's
this is necessarily the next Manny Pacquiao. How can we... I don't know. We just got to clickbait it.
There we go. The Spursy Podcast.
There we go. Spursy Podcast. All right. Well, I think that's how we're going to wrap it up, trying to decide how to title it.
Sounds good.
Good job, David, as always.
Thank you, Wes.
Thanks for listening to the Heat Check Podcast. As always, you can find us on iTunes, follow us on SoundCloud, check out the website, heatcheckpodcast.blogspot.com. You can find all the latest podcasts there and stuff like that. So, good job as always, David. Talk to you later, buddy.
Take care.
Saturday morning, I ain't gotta work. Last night's show sold a lot of merch. Bad bitch in my bed, so I ain't got a jerk. Forbes list caught me, so it's hard to make the dollar hurt. All we need is good green and some blue. 5-1, so it's guaranteed you can do you. Still keep the heater just in case we have a boo-boo. Kansas City natives and we are a little cuckoo.
This the type of shit to make the hood go crazy. On the interstate doing 180. She said, do it for me, baby. Took a double shot and then we all went crazy.